Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Today, live in the studio, at Carver and Teela Watson. Welcome to the program, Carver, Teela.
Thank you.
Where are we? There we go, Teela. Nice short. And, of course, my co-host, Amy McQuire. How are you, Amy?
Yeah, good this morning. How are you?
Oh, yes. Very well, very well. Especially after seeing the Cowboys get up pretty well last night.
I'm an Eels fan, so I don't want to talk about it. I can't deal with this.
Let's not go there. Today we're talking about the river story. And that was the creation of Carver and Teela's dad, Ross Watson. And we're going to play a couple of segments of that. It was his thesis.
Yeah, that's correct. He Dad went back to uni at the ripe old age of 60 and commenced his undergrad in creative writing. You know, he felt strongly about leaving something for his grandchildren and family and just for community in general and society in terms of content that he felt was lacking in social discussions. Hmm. So, yeah, he went through his undergrad and master's and went on to do his PhD. And River Story is the result of that PhD.
Hmm. The River Story, tell us the River Story. It's almost like a creation story. Is that how would you describe it?
Yeah.
But it's the voice of the river, the river being the Dawson, the river from home, that's telling the story. The story through the views and the perspective of the river. Is it fair to say that it would be like a creation story? Or how would you describe it?
I think it's sort of similar. I think there was a lot of things that, you know, Dad wanted to talk about to do with law and to do with the way that humans developed and the way that humans can further develop, I guess, that I think he didn't want to say in a way that appeared. Well, I think doing it through the river was a way to sort of do justice to it without sort of bringing attention to himself. You know, he was very humble, and so doing it through the river allowed him to, you know, talk about what he knew and what he knew to be true for him as a Dawson River Murray.
I think the other thing too, Tig, is that, you know, you sort of grew up on the Dawson, as did Dad, you know, and sort of being, you know, Dawson River Murrays and having that connection, you know, Kungaloo mob and through that country, it was part of his identity as well, you know, and you know, and all our family know that, you know, the health of the Dawson River is something very important to, you know, was very important to him and still is very important to our family in terms of our obligations to country. So I think it was also fitting from that sense, you know, that certainly the Dawson River was a part of him and is part of our connection to country.
Yeah, and he says in it too that, you know, the deeper implications of creation and of how humans and the world came to be is, you know, I guess it's different for everyone. And so it's not so much a creation story of this is what, you know, it's not saying there's one God or there's, you know,
one creator or whatever.
Yeah, it's more about the story of humanity and what's happened through, you know, how we've moved from natural law and you know, reciprocity and congeniality, and we've moved to this space of competition. And, yeah, so it's more of an exploration of humanity in that sense.
Now, your dad, it's just over 2 years since he passed away. He was fortunate, we were fortunate enough that he finished writing the story. Mm. And it was what recognised, or he was awarded his doctorate, was he?
Yeah,
posthumous award. Yeah, was that the situation?
Yeah, yeah. So the university was kind enough to, well, not kind enough, recognise the work he'd done to date through particular work of Dr. Sue Carsten and Aunty Aileen Morton Robinson. You know, they were across the work that Dad had done and made that known to the university, in which they recognised that. So we attended a graduation ceremony there at QPAC. And, yeah, it was quite a special moment. You know, he was a sort of last recipient on the night, and Teela and myself jumped up and...
They did a lovely speech as well. Like, yeah, it was a bit surprising. I don't think they do that sort of thing usually.
No, they spoke about sort of, you know, all the work that he'd done, you know, with Murray School and the station and that sort of stuff. And the whole place stood up.
Yeah.
It was magic.
Yeah, they all standing ovation. It was really deadly.
Well, he was a visionary. He established the Murray School. I think next year's the 30th anniversary of that Murray School, the first independent community controls school for our mob. And you both went there. Carver, it was the only school that you knew.
Yeah.
From day one to end, year 12.
That's right,
And now you're about to graduate with a law degree.
Yeah, 2 degrees, one in justice, majoring in criminology, and law degree. Yeah.
Wow.
So last semester, just doing two subjects at the moment.
Mm.
Yeah. No, it was a special place, Murray School. You know, I finished grade 7 and I'd heard sort of talk for a long time, or not for a long time, but for a year or two, people sort of saying, oh, Murray School might have a high school, this and that. And sort of got to grade 7 and there's a group of us and we said, oh, to fill out on that, well, are we going to do this or what? So they obliged and we started a couple of years with distance ed and did that up until just before grade 10, I think, and we got the trial to be junior high school, sort of through to year 10, did that.
So it expanded a year at a time.
Yeah, so it sort of went up every year that I did, which is good. No, but there was other mob there with us, you know.
Yeah.
There was. I think we started out with near on about 12 or 15 students, No, it was the only school that I ever knew. And I sort of, as many character flaws I had at that age, I still sort of had an awareness of, you know, how unique and important Murray School was, you know, and how important it was to have someone go through, you know. And I'd been there since grade one and sort of thought, well, you know, go all the way through and just to sort of show that, you know, we can educate our own children and we do have a successful model.
And Teela, your experience, it was the only school you went to, wasn't it?
Not quite. I was there for 10 years, I think. But sort of, I was there sort of most of my life, sort of growing up with these fellas. I think Carver was a bit upset in his first year and we all end up going in when I was a baby. But, it's a very special place, a very special experience. I didn't realise until, you know, I got older that a lot of people, even Murray people, don't spend as much time surrounded by Murray people. And that's a big one for me because a lot of different times when I talk to white fellas, they don't really understand sometimes how I use words or, you know, where I'm coming from even. And so it's, like, really interesting to kind of see then, you know, how much that growing up just surrounded by black fellas, how much that's shaped the way that I think and the way that I do things, you know. One of the things at Murray School is, and I remember it was like a shared knowledge, you know, that we were always being watched by the younger kids and there was always a family sort of feel, like, you know, you take care of people. And a lot of the things that Murray School has, not many schools come close to, and people don't grow up with the same values. They don't, you know, they don't share. They don't care. You know, a lot of people. So
respect, sort of thing, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Back to respect.
Yeah.
Well, none of them get called Mr. and Mrs. or Uncle or Auntie.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You
know. Yes.
Yeah.
You don't see that.
Yes.
Most schools.
And of course, he was the founder of this place. A great legacy.
Mm.
It's been left behind. And this place here, I mean, it's, I think, 24 years we've been on, since we've had our licence, 22 years of being on air. Yeah, he certainly wasn't one to let things go by. Mm. With the river story, the idea was to have something that was make it available to people, a CD, what have you?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, River Story was born out of very similar motivations as the Murray School and the station, you know. Like, we talk about the work that Dad did, you know, through this, that he was involved in, you know. It wasn't just him. There's, you know, there was community needs and there was discussions going on at that time where there was a need for this sort of stuff, and he took, and, you know, he was sort of played a part in that. I think River Story is sort of, you know, where he got to later in life and what he found was the most important thing in terms of creating discussion. You know, there was a need for education for our children, you know, for our young people in our community. There was a need for our own representation in media and being able to define our own stories and tell our own narrative and that sort of stuff. Mm. But I think later in life, Dad also understood that, you know, there was a broader discussion for all people that needed to happen. Mm. You know, he was concerned about, you know, looking after country and you know, the global financial, environmental crisis, but also financial crisis. Yeah. You know, exactly. Poverty is a very big issue,
it's
and
connected.
A need to discuss that as well. So I think, you know, River Story was really motivated by him to generate that discussion and provide sort of his perspective, an Indigenous perspective on sort of where society and mankind's gone wrong in terms of how we view each other, how we view country, and how we relate to each other and country. So that's in a nutshell, I think, you know, what motivated that yarn. I was thinking on the way in, like, why did he do it? And all of our family will know, like, how much he sat there and watched the news and start swearing and cussing. You, so-and-so. And he just became really frustrated, you know. He became frustrated with the world. And I think there are a lot of people out there that can relate to that sense of frustration. Certainly. Yeah, you know, whether it be politics, whether it be economics, whether it be, you know, environmental issues.
Especially in today's situation, time. Look at the federal government, look at the state government, look at the Labor Party's policy on turning back the boats and all sorts of things that's happening today. Frustration,
absolutely,
man,
is
there, you know.
And I think for Dad, you know, there was not much difference between a lot of them.
That's right.
No.
For a lot of us, there's no difference between those two.
And I think he became frustrated with, you know, people arguing about Labor and Liberal and that sort of stuff. And he said, you know, for him it was, you know, we need to get back to connection with the country and all come from land, you know. And I think that's why River Story for him was so important. It gave that voice of country. It gave that voice of a river, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of it was to express the meaning of humanness. You know, one of the things he used to say a lot was that white fellas and a lot of people on the earth at the moment and people in power, they've forgotten the meaning of humanness. They have no meaning of humanness. And so all of these other problems that stem from that, like, you know, the problem with the governments and the problem with, you know, the mining companies and the multi-billion dollar organisations and corporations that are running things and driving the earth to destruction, really, is that they don't have humanness. They don't have a process of thinking, well, what's going to happen after we mine this land? What's going to happen in 100 years, in 200 years? You know, I think it was Dad's way of giving everyone the opportunity to reconnect with humanness and to be able to take that for their lives and live it out.
And it is meant for something, you know, for anybody who does enjoy it and wants to know more and is interested to work with us, I mean, it was created as a tool for discussion. So now we've got a website, theriverstory.com, all one word, and we've also got a possible crowdfunding site to generate funds for a first round of publication. We're hoping to get 500 books, and that's about $5,000 that we're trying to raise to do that. But on that site, you can also purchase an audio copy, which, you know, will be airing here on the station. But the audio copy is only the narrative of the river, there's a lot more to the written work in terms of what he wrote for his PhD and that sort of stuff. A lot of that's got old family stories. I was just going back over it the last few days, you know, because we're coming on air and, you know, smiling and laughing a few of the stories. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's more in the written version than there is in the story, but I think the other great thing is that he was able to record it. You know,
he spent some considerable time in here recording it and getting it right, and then we spent considerable time in editing it and cleaning it up and putting some sound effects and things in there that he was happy with.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate that we got it done in time, that he was still able to see it through to the last edit and say, I'm happy with it. That was amazing.
Mm.
Two terms you used, Teela, earlier, congeniality and reciprocity, are two big things on his mind, values wise. You know.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, there's a lot of like the morals and the sort of the culture of Western society. It encourages competition, and competition is almost like the opposite of congeniality in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So with that is, I guess it's about, you know, how we were taught as kids from all of our family, you know, about sharing with each other and just not looking for reasons to fight or argue or, you know, everyone, I remember like, you know, being young and that, and I wanted to go somewhere or something, and everyone would sort of sit down and they'd all talk about it together. You know, one person wouldn't say no and yes, and there'd be a discussion like that. It would sort of be like, you know, the answers would come about through logical reasoning between all of these people, and everyone was respected, and everyone was, you know, everyone's points were valid and given voice to and understood and heard. And so that's how we form the decision that we make. And that's like, it's so simple, but it's so opposite to the way that our whole country is governed. And, you know, I get these letters in the mail saying I'm getting fined because I'm not voting. And all I write that I choose to not involve myself in a competitive form of governance. You know, like, these fellas are too worried about fighting each other. They don't care about the country, you know, as in, you know, like, the air and water and what happens to our homelands, you know. They don't feel it like us. And they don't listen to us, you know, because they're not congenial. And so congeniality is really important.
And, you know, in writing this story, Dad did do a lot of research. And for him, you know, it was very similar to what Aunty Mary Graham talks about, Nay Lil, in terms of Indigenous terms of reference. We got a different way of operating, of being, our relationships and the way we view people, each other, as well as country. And they are based on a reciprocal relationship and congeniality, which is that goodwill, is that we all understand, have a healthy respect for each other. Mm. And Dad, you know Dad Tiger, he'd sit there sometimes and one thing he didn't research, but he sort of figured out, and I think they're just starting to realise now with a lot of, like, this neuroscience and that, he always said that people would never evolve to what we are today if it wasn't that congeniality, if we didn't learn to share food with each other, and if we didn't learn to look after each other and have a congenial relationship. And then that follows on from, you know, the way we view country and that sort of stuff. So in his view, it was, I mean, it was the apex of human evolution, is that ability to live in harmony with each other, you know, and have that congenial fellowship with people around us, as well as country, and that was part of his thesis, you know, is that you know, we evolved to be living in harmony, not living in fear and indifference and focusing on difference between each other, racism, classism. All that stuff is boundaries to that congeniality. Yeah. So that it was a very important thing for him and part of his, I think, what sort of really drove his theory about, you know, river story and what he put down.
We're going to play a segment, and they're 5 and 6 minutes long. We must have, I don't know, there's quite a number of segments, 20.
I think it's about 20 or 30 tracks,
yeah,
all up.
Like that. Yeah. So we're going to play a segment each, at the end of each Let's Talk program. So at about 10 to 10, we'll play a segment each morning. And people get to hear that, of course, with the repeat of Let's Talk in the evening, and it'll be on the podcast. But we might play the first segment now.
Yeah.
After that introduction. My guests in the studio are Carver and Teela Watson. They're talking about their dad's story, the river story, Ross Watson's river story, and that we've that he recorded in the studios here, and we've edited and put in sound effects and stuff. Sit back for about 6 minutes and have a listen to this.
I am a river. This is my story. I am a crease in the thin surface crust on a cooling blob of molten rock. I was formed many ages ago when the movements of land masses and volcanoes pushed up mountain ranges and peaks in our great Southland. In earlier times, when land rose above the water in different places, my basin land had emerged, flavoured by the mighty Salt Mother, who gave experience of the moon tides and the myriad life forms of the oceans. Sometimes I flowed in different directions, responding to great land movements throughout the ages of my life. But always, my tentacles of thread-like veins and arteries obeyed the natural laws and empowered me through the runoff from my basin's watershed. In secret places, my subsurface channels used to freshen my waters during the dry, and when my levels are high, at some junctions, I sometimes flow in opposite directions at the same time. The creator spirits who cause the undulations in land and sea are best explained in the concepts of my human children. The simplicity of my descriptions may not suit the minds of all people. Suffice to say, I am of the substance and spirit of creation, which means the least is part of the most, and the greatest is of the smallest, and everything is connected through relationships of fluctuating balance. I will try to explain for people who do not use human intelligence to learn the natural and proper laws of creation. Later, my human ones may reveal in their own voice how they define existence and what they know to be sacred. My natural voice is the sound of my water, creatures and atmosphere, all intermingled with the sensations of smell, touch and taste. Those with the ears to hear will notice how my voice has changed in recent times, since the coming of the colonial people, who are taught to place natural law and logic apart from their pursuit of assets, experience and images. The natural laws are from our universe and have driven the evolution of all Earth species, including humanity. These laws relate to every part of creation in shaping the natural environment. They do not emanate from any particular species of creation. The main feature of natural law is connectedness. Yes, connectedness. Remember, everything from the smallest to the largest is connected, and any significant interference in an area of creation has repercussions on every other neighbouring connected area. The introduced stinging bee demonstrates this. Because the insect is aggressive and kills my smaller kucha and carver bees, many of my smaller plants grow no more. The new creature is too big to pollinate their tiny blossoms. This has had the effect of reducing the diversity and richness of my systems, and with other more obvious and violent attacks, is moving me ever closer to becoming a dead watercourse. Yes, a muddy, dying river, filled with chemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides contained in the millions of tons of topsoil washed from my now cleared and cultivated flatlands. My human custodians are no longer able to protect and care for me, and my entire basin is being challenged in our production of clean air and water. The story of my human children is dependent on and follows the story of my other children, the multitude of unique plants and wildlife species that have evolved, flourished, waned, and further evolved through the long ages of my lifetime. My grasses, shrubs, and trees are in ongoing relationships with the birds, ants, insects, and animals of my country and me. These relationships are interdependent and fluctuate according to the seasons and climate, but are very fragile and need to be monitored closely by my human children. My humans are the dark-skinned ones who walk the country barefoot and reared their children on my banks. They are part of me and have lived within my basin since they became human in our great Southland. For more than 100 millennia, my humans have forged my character through their custodial activities, while I have forged their character through my nurturing role. Even when the seasons are not kind, my people and me are one. My family of the water systems was the lifeblood of our children right around our continent. Along with nourishment and life, we gave other important things to our humans. Yes, to each member of our clans, we gave identity, we gave rights, and we gave responsibilities, which ensured everyone had a job for life. In this way, philosophical ideas, as well as personal aspirations and dreams, were always grounded in custodial care for country. When my people call themselves Dawson River Murrays, they are identifying where their ancestors have lived and died in an unbroken line of blood through their parents since people became human. They are saying, throughout all that time, they did not have the need or right to take food or resources from any neighbouring country, because everything they needed to live and develop their human potential was within my basin. Thus, I am the lifeblood of my people, forever. This is confirmed by their very breath, because we share the same imprints in our invisible particles. Yes, my people and me are one.
Segment one of The River Story by Ross Watson. It's a long story, but and for the first segment, I mean, it gives people a little bit of a taste, and we'll probably play another one at least during the show. He talks about connectedness, something that's missing. It's not only congeniality and reciprocity that's missing from the dominant culture, the settler society. That connectedness is all a part of the one, of course.
Yeah.
And it's good to see this brought through, the need to understand connectedness.
Mm.
What do you want to say after hearing that first segment?
Just on connectedness, you know, there's something we share with all Indigenous cultures all around the world, you know. And I think that's sort of part and parcel of what Dad's talking about, is that we've had a divergence of how we evolved to live, and we've forgotten one very important thing, is that we're all part of this ecosystem of the world, of the planet.
Mm.
And to view it as a commodity, or view it as something separate other than ourselves, is inherently flawed.
Mm-hmm. We're not the top of the food chain, and we think we are. The system, the society.
Mm. Yeah, they're like an inflated ego of our own importance, of man's sort of own importance, dominance. So I think that's sort of what he's getting to, is we've missed the sort of the one of the key principles, or the key sort of basic essentials of life, is that we are connected, and we're all connected. Humans to country, country to humans, and everything in between.
I think that's often missing when they talk about. I thought it was a beautiful love letter to almost and an expression of the importance of land rights, particularly. But when people talk about blackfella's connection to country, it's always about how blackfella's need country, how we need that connection to land. But also, what I took from that segment was how country needs Aboriginal people as well, and how tied we are to being custodians of that country. And that's something that's often missing, that we have a responsibility, and the country also needs the Aboriginal custodians as well.
Yeah,
for sure. I think that comes back to that point about, you know, reciprocity and congeniality. It's a two-way relationship. You know, on one hand, country cares for us, but on the other hand, we are custodians, we are carers of country, and our identity is sort of founded in that obligation.
And one of the things that Dad really used to sort of, I think he might quote it in the book, is a quote of Aunty Mary Graham's, which talks about there being two main relationships, and the first is the relationship between people and country, and the second is the relationship between people. And the second is dependent on the first. So if the relationship between people and country isn't right, then the relationship between people can't be right. It's sort of, you know, we need to respect the land to be able to respect each other properly.
Dad always said respect was, you know, the largest part of law, and respect being, you know, that reciprocity and that sort of stuff. But respect, you know, we all understand what we give and what we get from each other, whether it be country and people. And I think that sort of underpins, you know, a lot of what he's talking about. I did want to say one thing before we did air it. You know, there's been a lot of people since Dad passed that have done work on River Story. Particularly, I call her Aunty Sue now, Dr. Sue Carson, and Aunty Aileen, and everybody there. You know, all the way he was writing, you know, through and getting this story down, there's been a whole team out there at QUT and their Indigenous postgrad research centre there that have all, you know, sat and talked with him and listened to him and shared ideas and that sort of stuff. So, you know, need to particularly mention and acknowledge everyone out there. You know, Susan Beetson, Aunty Chris, and also, you know, another two sisters that aren't here. Younger sister Gala spent a lot of time particularly getting the manuscript ready, as well as older sister Biri, in doing work to make sure that we're in the position that we are today to be able to share it. So I just wanted to acknowledge those people. I wanted to do it before it played, but don't be wild at me now, you mob.
As long as it's the recognition's there, Carver, the appreciation.
No, we know it, and Dad knew it, and we, you know, we acknowledge all them people as part of the process.
Where do you see things going with the River Story? I mean, you've got crowdfunding situation. Your plan is some 500 books. Where do you see things going? The audio copy that people will get. I mean, it's about 2 hours or 2.5 hours or something, or what we've recorded, is it not?
Yeah. It's around about 2 hours, I believe. I could be wrong, but Dad had a very big vision. You know, he always thought big. But, you know, look, we just want it to be a catalyst for discussion. Anybody who enjoys it, anybody who would like to know more, we urge them to get in touch, because, you know, the more people we have talking about it and having these discussions, I think the further down the track we'll get to a better world. And I think that was certainly Dad's intention, is that people who share this vision, we need to start talking and working together, you know what I mean? It's only through us making decisions in how we operate that we'll actually see change down the track. You know, a lot of us are complicit and don't even know what we support through our everyday lives. Like, we've all got super accounts that could be all invested right now in practices that we don't all agree in. You know, it's about, so how do we start to come together and talk about, well, we don't want to support these things no more. We've got ideas and a vision for a healthy
plan. There are other options.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's about, how do we start taking steps now to get to sort of where we want to be? Tig, you know, your mum, Marnie, she always spoke about, you know, we need to see as far in front of us as we do behind us. You know, we take a lot of things from our old people, and that was one that always stuck with me. And I think this is, you know, Dad's, you know, this is how he's thinking, future generations, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, Aunt always talked about, you know, being an honourable ancestor. And so I think, you know, and one of the things Dad always used to say is that we want to empower the powerless. And so essentially I think we want to empower the powerless to become honourable ancestors. You know, we want to empower people to be able to say, yeah, in my grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren, they're going to have a safe planet. They're going to be able to breathe fresh air. They're going to be able to drink clean water. And they're going to have their birthright, which is fresh air and clean water and safety and stuff like that, you know?
Everything we're doing now is not something that he did not already think about. You know, we spoke about all this, and everybody that I mentioned before, you know, knew all these discussions as well. And, you know, he always said on the website, the headline will be "A Healthy Planet for Future Generations." That's it, you know?
Yeah. And even, like, he also used to say, you know, like, as much as we get wild at being oppressed by white fellas, and as much as we, you know, as much as all the pain we feel and all the anger and all the emotions that go with being colonised, at the end of the day, to ensure a healthy planet for our children, there's got to be a healthy planet for their children, you know? And it's like, you know, that common cause, you know? I think I was listening to you yesterday or something. You were talking about, no, not yesterday, the other day, talking about how, you know, when snakes come for the birds, they all sing out. All the birds sing out. They might not be getting along, but they all sing out together. They all work together to ensure the safety of their offspring, you know. And so that's what we want to do, pretty much, you know. We can see these big problems like poverty, like global warming, you know, and all of these big issues are coming for us, but at the moment everyone's still stuck in this mind frame of competition and you know, this sort of black and white sort of thinking and individualism and, you know, being disconnected and being displaced. And so we want to bring things back and go, look, we got common causes, common issues, common threats, and we need to work together to make things better for our children.
Do you ever see that happening, given that Indigenous knowledges are not respected anywhere in this country, really?
I absolutely think it is. I think there's a lot of mob who we just don't get the media play and a sort of front page and that sort of stuff. I mean, you got to walk down the street here, West End, and there's all sorts of mob who want to, you know, who support Indigenous causes and understand, you know, the principles and tenements that we're talking about. I think, you know, there are a lot of, you think about the rise of just things like solar panels and that sort of stuff. People are environmentally conscious, you know. I think that, you know, there's a...
I think people maybe, but the policymakers aren't. There's a divide between those two.
Yeah, but we're not worried about them, you know. We worry about working with people who want to share and who want to work together.
Yeah.
Them fellas, like, they're always going to play their games and hold their prejudices and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you know, when there's enough of people working together and doing our own thing, they'll have to change their tune.
Yeah.
Because people aren't going to want to vote in people who are talking backward and sort of, you know, outdated ideas and stuff, you know.
You used to talk about just growing your own food a lot. Just to take that step of being responsible, being able to provide, just a little white polystyrene box or something, or if you didn't have the land to do it on in your backyard. But he always spoke about just being able to grow some veggies and a bit of fruit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How much that would mean in a physical sense and a spiritual and emotional sense as well. To know that we can do things.
Yeah. And it's also about, you know, not putting money back into the same old people that are keeping it for themselves, you know, and they're using that to then go and, you know, practice, like, you know, farming and stuff in ways that isn't sustainable for our country, and it's killing our country, you know. So it was all about, you know, putting money back into the positive changes, you know. If we could, you know, if there was five of us growing different veggies, well, we could trade them with each other, and we're saving money because we're not
dependent
giving it
on
back
big,
to the big banks, basically. Like,
big corporations, that sort of stuff.
And being less dependent on places like Woolworths, where there's oranges and fruit on the shelves that have been in Coldingham for a year or more.
Yeah.
I mean, there's at least a year plus from the time they were taken off the trees, you know, from out of the paddocks. And it's that sort of stuff was just shocking. And, and the connectedness is not just black connections. It's connectedness with human beings, bringing the humanity back into society.
Yeah.
And mainstream Australians, the recent arrivals, they can be a part of all of this because a lot of times they think, oh, no, that's just a black thing. That's what black folks This
to,
is not the case.
They have to be. This is a it's a global – like these issues are just human issues. They're social issues, you know. And even I think, you know, when we do talk about Indigenous issues – quite often we shouldn't be talking about Indigenous issues. You know, these are issues that are suffered by all people, no matter where they're from or what their background is. There's just as many non-Indigenous people in our low socioeconomic areas are getting locked up over, you know, overrepresented
homeless
criminal justice and that sort of stuff. Absolutely, you know.
Yes.
And I think this is what, you know, I think this is where, you know, Dad's thinking was, is that we all, as people, need to sit down and really have a discussion about who we are and what we're doing here and what sort of legacy are we leaving for our children, you know.
It's a system that is our problem. It's not the people, the white fellow, the recent arrivals from Iran, Iraq and different African countries. It's not the people.
It's the
system.
Mm.
And the mentality, you know.
Yes,
like
that
Dad,
attitude.
Dad taught me about, I remember he reading something to me one day and he's saying these big words. I was saying, what's that mean, Dad, you know? Ontology is the way ontology is like what we perceive to be life. And epistemology is how we carry that out.
I was thinking that word epistemology. I didn't know. Yeah. I thought he was talking dirty or something. What you saying here? What's the go with this word, you know? And it got real deadly that these big words were coming out when he was writing this story and in university, you know? So what's epistemology?
Words.
Epistemology?
So epistemology.
Epistemology. I don't want,
epistemology is the way that we carry out what we perceive to be life.
Hmm.
And ontology is what we perceive to be life. So I think that's where this story is very similarly a creation story. Though it doesn't tell the story of how things were created.
Hmm. Hmm. But human development.
Yeah, human development. And so really, it is the meeting point, I think, where humans kind of part from each other is ontology, is what we perceive to be life, you know. Some of us are extremely connected to the land and extremely connected to, you know, the animals and sustainability and stuff like that. And then there's others who perceive life to be, you know, something to be spent, sort of thing, you know, whereas, you know, with that way of being connected, you know, we perceive life to be a brick in a wall, you know, it's one small brick like Aunty Lilla talks about, it's one small brick and there's going to be many more. So if we put our, you know, we try to put our brick in the right sort of way, then someone's going to be able to build something strong on top of it.
I think the other important thing and the key sort of, the key thing is that this isn't about highlighting differences between people or you fellas got it backward and you need to listen to us. It is so far from that that I can't express it enough, because it is about wanting to work with people. No matter where you're from, what your background is, you're concerned most people, 99% of people are concerned about the welfare of their children and what kind of world they're going to grow up in.
Well, what's the framework around, or the what's in words for black card, working with people.
That's it. Yeah.
Not for people.
Yeah. Mm.
So again, there's only Lilla coming in from that angle. There's my mother with ancestors, honourable ancestors, you know, your father now with the river story that touches everybody.
Mm.
And I think it's probably time to play this play another one, eh? What do you reckon?
No worries, sounds good.
Amy, before we do, this is the first time you've heard this discussion. You never met Uncle Ross. What are your thoughts on when you hear that first? Does it make you want to hear more? What sort of thoughts are going on in your mind here?
Yeah, definitely. I think, as I was saying before, it seemed to embody a lot of... He basically said what I think is so important about land rights, and I think often when you talk about land rights, it becomes almost this concept that people don't really understand, and it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than just restricted to debates around economic development and the ability to obtain capital from land. It's that spiritual connection, and I think people don't articulate it enough, and I think it's a really important way to show, particularly to non-Indigenous people, that connection in a way that they probably haven't heard before.
And in a non-threatening, way.
I thought it was beautiful.
Well.
Yeah. It was lovely to listen to too.
Tila, I remember you were telling me just the other day, you're a little fella, near 4-year-old, looks like he's going to have a mouthful of teeth before he's six.
4 months.
What did I say?
You said 4 years.
Well, that's big sister. Little fella, four months old, and looks like he's going to have a mouthful of teeth by the time he's 6 months. But your father used to go out for you and get that witchetty grub, the dundun, what we call him. He'd go out here in Brisbane, in the suburbs where he's lived, he'd go come back with that. And you did the same thing for this little fella the other day. He showed you, well, you know, this is the sort of tree, this is where you go, this is how you do it.
Yep.
He was always wanting to pass that sort of stuff on.
Yeah, it's very important, you know.
When you think about young woman in this day and age, and you're able to go out and with teething, because our mob know teething, witchetty grub, good for the gums and teething, and you're able to go out and do that.
Yeah, give you a good feeling, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't too good at it. I busted him, but I got him out. But it was the first time I'd done it by myself, you know, because I always remember Dad doing it and showing us how to do it. But it just give you a good feeling, you know, that you're doing something for your baby that's been done for our babies since the beginning of time again, you know.
Many, many babies beforehand. Yes.
Just continuing that sort of tradition and,
My guest today, live in the studio, Carver Watson, Tila Watson, and we're talking about their dad's The River Story. That he's left us with. He's just over 2 years ago passed away. But with this river story around, it's amazing. So let's hope you can stay with us each morning and share this, the river story that Uncle Ross put down for all of us. Here's the second episode.
I love my human children, the Murray people, but I do not dote on them. I am sometimes generous and often harsh in providing what each season allows. I am male and female in my functions. To all my children, I am mother in my nurturing and recycling activities. When the wet seasons come, I am male in my bed and cleanse and renew my basin lover land. The rains and tempests feed my country and sometimes fill me to overflowing, quickening my pulse and exciting me to a reckless frenzy as I scour my bed and invade the low-lying plains in my savage and joyous voyage to surge into the great Mother Ocean and mingle and become one with her in her salt. Through my floods, I enforce the great law of nature by allowing only the strongest to survive and evolve. My children are strong because I wash the weak away in my surges. I have no mercy for the ignorant, the foolish, or the weak among my children because I obey only natural law. But the last two centuries have brought catastrophic changes to me and all my children. Changes that have devastated my humans and seen many of my species of flora and fauna ground into extinction, forcing our great Southland into an unnecessary journey to wasteland. The destruction began with the invasion of our country by strangers. My people named the newcomers Miglu because of their pale skin. They are a people ruled by others who use chains and force of arms to brutalize them. Thus, the downtrodden Miglu were sent, their rulers having no good intentions for country or people. They came across the waters in boats driven by the wind. The remnants of my clans have experienced much ill will and injustice in their efforts to protect themselves and the land. And behold the scars on country, everywhere the chain system has spread, and the species made extinct by intent, ignorance, and carelessness. Like others who lived free, our natural people experienced genocidal diseases, guns and prisons when British Christian colonialism came to our great Southland. Yes, Many tools are needed to capture foreign lands. Nowadays, all hear the songs of conquest and bravery, attesting to the strangers' implanted dreams of homeland and rulers. Against the background noise of machines and loud voices, few hear the strong songs of country talking truth. I am a river and no longer healthy. Such is the desperation of the times. I have had to send one of my children among the Miglu to tell this story. Oh, the trouble it's been. This one was chosen because he came from the best of my people, the ones who had experienced the worst of the degradations forced on my children and survived with their humanity intact. I have produced no finer humans than the family of the person whose pen I speak through. Know that his words are true, though his spirit is weak, because the words come through him, not from him. Know that a mighty creator spirit touched this weakling, so others will have the opportunity to hear and perhaps understand the truth. Know also that I cannot speak otherwise, because I am the truth. One look at my muddy waters, dead trees, and extinct species is no illusion. I am dying, that is true. But I am not yet dead, nor are the spirits of our country. As a river, I can attest that until recent times, relations between humans and country in all our Southland were congenial. The culture evolved around custodial lifestyles according to the laws and teachings of the ancient ones. Thus all generations were assured of inheriting healthy country from their ancestors. Still today, my people teach their children to return a morsel of each handful of food given to them. Yes, even before the young learn to walk, they are taught to share. Thus, before becoming self-functioning humans, Murray children are taught a basic element of their culture, that of sharing and caring. In this way, the ego of each Murray child is grown past the possessive instinct, which is identified as a primitive part of the human makeup, because it is deeply embedded in the human psyche. This convivial lesson for life was natural among my river people. Indeed, in every clan on our continent, this practice has been passed down from ancient times. My writer believes scholars may soon explore whether this practice evolved among ancient creature ancestors as a social tool, helping them to descend from treetops.
You're listening to The River Story as written and recorded, voiced by Uncle Ross Watson. And in the studio we have his son Carver and daughter Teela telling us about how this came to be, how the this was his a thesis that he wrote for, I don't understand all that academic stuff, PhD in creative writing. Yeah. I just don't understand all
that. I think you might end up with a PhD in philosophy.
Well, that's what a PhD stands for. Doctor of Philosophy or something like that.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
Philosophy doctor.
Yes. That's, and it was awarded posthumously a little time after he'd passed. How can people
get involved
or engage with you?
So we've got a website. It's still sort of under development. We sort of just went live last week because we know we're going to air. So it's theriverstory.com, all one word. Also, our possible site is www.possible.com/riverstory, or if you just go to the possible website and search for River Story, you'll find it there. And as I said, there's options there to purchase an audio version. We'll, you know, do up some CDs of this sort of audio version here and send it out. But yeah, like even if people just want to be in touch and know how to be involved, like I said, we're just looking to collaborate. We want to hear from people. We want to hear people's ideas for the website. We'd hope to start a forum on the website. So anybody with those sort of skills and knowledge that wants to be involved, we're more than happy to hear from you.
Amy, how can Facebook, the station's Facebook page or something or other, there's another way that people can sort
of we'll put it on Facebook as well and Twitter and, promote it through that.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, eh?
Thank you.
it's been very good.
Can we just, I just also like to acknowledge all my uncles and aunties and family and recognise them. I know it's mixed emotions to hear from Dad's voice, but as we know, it's been a long time coming and this was his intention, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in and sharing it with us.
No worries.
And we will play a segment the last of, in the last, 10 to 10 each morning. You all have a great day. Join us tomorrow for Let's Talk.